Hey everyone, welcome to the Star Wars Rebels After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Season 3, episodes 12 and 13? Maybe. I don't know. That's what our thumbnail says, so that is what we are going with. The Ghosts of Geonosis, parts 1 and 2. We'll be breaking down the episodes and talking about our thoughts and predictions for the future in just a moment.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Megan had a really good groove going to the like dubstep that goes with the AfterBuzz intro.
In my mind, I'm a DJ when I hear the AfterBuzz.
It would have made absolutely no sense if like she'd still been doing it when the cameras came up. But like, I wish you all could have seen
it. But it would have been wonderful
because it was pretty glorious.
My favorite is still just the one time there was like a perfect transition between the AfterBuzz theme and whatever music we were playing. There was like a perfect transition in terms of
movement. Perfectly DJ, bring it in.
You do like the crossfade.
Yeah, guys, that was all me.
Yes.
That was all me.
Hey, everyone, welcome to the Star Wars Rebels After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Guys, if you are watching us on YouTube, why don't you go over to iTunes, check us out there, subscribe. Leave us a review. When we get reviews, we love to give you guys shout outs on the show because we like it when people say nice things about us, so we in turn will say nice things about you. Though if you are listening on YouTube, remember, or listening on iTunes, remember you can also watch on YouTube. It's very confusing. And you can watch on YouTube live. We're streaming live on YouTube right now. We have moved to a new time for anybody that is listening on iTunes and is like, hey, I want to check it out on YouTube. We are now on Sundays at 8 o'clock p.m., which is great because the show is on Saturdays and then we're here the next day talking about it, so it all makes sense. If you are watching live on YouTube, we are following along with that live chat as well as the hashtag ABTVRebels, which is one of my favorite hashtags in existence, and I'm not just talking about AfterBuzz hashtags. I am joined
it's
by
in the top five.
It is, yeah, it's like in my top five hashtags of all time. Well, maybe top 10. Nope, top five.
allow me to introduce
my fabulous panel of ladies, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. You can find me on Twitter at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T.
Megan Salinas.
Hey, guys. You can follow me at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N.
And Joelle Monique.
Hey, guys. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
And I am Emma Fife. I can be found all over the internet at my name, Emma Fife. So, we're diving into the second half of Season 3 of Star Wars Rebels.
Yes.
And it's really kind of impossible to talk about this episode without talking about a little film entitled Rogue One.
That little indie film that came out towards the end of the year. A lot of Oscar buzz on that
one. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you haven't seen Rogue One yet, one, what are you waiting for?
Yes.
Two, please pause this and then come back after you've seen Rogue One because we're going to talk spoilers and you don't want that.
It can't be helped. We can't avoid it, I don't
think.
No.
Given the contents of this episode, given the characters in this episode, given what they were talking about, we can't not talk about Rogue One.
Yes.
So please go see the movie if you haven't seen it already. We don't want to spoil you, but at this point, you've been warned.
Yes, exactly. Consider yourselves warned. And let's talk about Rogue One, because at the point that we left off with our show, Rogue One was not yet in theaters. It had had the premiere. Joelle had already seen it.
Yeah.
So, Katie, what'd you think?
I cried.
Yeah, so
like a lot.
So
like
many
tears.
The whole
time or at specific parts?
Oh, at the end.
The last
10 minutes was like, no, I am done. I am done with it. Oh, my God, Darth Vader.
I have to wonder if this is the best third act of a film since Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
I was going
to
say, which Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, Return of the King. The one where you
which ending,
like,
by
yeah,
the way?
The extended edition ending. Or,
yes. Yeah, exactly. I remember being in the theater and being like, it's out. There's still more, and it's so great. And this is how I felt watching the end of Rogue One, where I'm like, it's still going. They're going to lead us right up to... It's still happening!
Yeah.
It's so powerful and just amazing.
It was spectacular.
The Darth Vader scene, I swear to God, you know, there were all of like two of them. One of them had a dad joke, which I was so... So happy, you guys.
That's
so happy.
I feel like that's one of the most polarizing topics on the internet, by the way. Is that
dad
like Darth
joke?
Vader dad joke?
It wins. It's aces.
He is a dad. He just doesn't know he's a dad.
Well, you know, he just kind of walked off chortling to himself, like, yeah, I'm having a good chortle at that one.
I mean, in theory, he knew he was maybe a dad. I mean, you know.
In his mind, he was gonna be.
Sure, you know that guy doesn't know whether to be scared or embarrassed.
Yeah,
probably like, both. That's the best. Darth Vader's just like,
yes.
Yeah, I did a thing.
Yeah. But. So, Katie, you cried for about the last 10 minutes. Megan, what did you think?
I went on a roller coaster of emotion with Rogue One because I went in going, they're all going to die. And then you start getting to know these people and liking them.
Chad Imwe.
There was a point in this film where I'm like, I want to see an entire series of this crew of people going on Guardians of the Galaxy, Outlaw Star, Cowboy Bebop, adventures.
No, totally. Yeah.
Because they would be so fun.
Yeah.
And now that they're, like, they're getting to know each other, too, as we're getting to know them. And then just the tragedy at the end. And K2OS is my favorite.
K2SO. Yeah.
Once K went down, it was like, oh, they're all going to die.
It was either all or nothing.
And the second,
I held out hope. Like, I went in thinking they were all going to die. And then as I started to like them, I'm like, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. And then Kay dies. And I'm like, nope, they're all dead. And of course you're going to kill Alan Tudyk. You, like, sci-fi movie that's just going to, like, all in all, it was slow in parts, but it's a very different type of Star Wars movie.
And it was a war movie.
Yeah, you have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
But I loved it.
It was super interesting to me because I had read, I heard from a lot of my friends who had been at the premiere that they felt the first act was kind of slow. And I think because I went in thinking it was going to be slow, it didn't feel slow to me. I was like, oh no, this is like luxurious. And I'm enjoying getting to get some of Jin's backstory because, you know, Jin was a really interesting hero for me because so many of the heroes that we see in the Star Wars franchise, with Ezra actually being a big exception, they don't know their parents. They don't really know where they came from. Like, they're kind of that hero dropped in the middle of a desert planet being like, man, my life is terrible.
Also, they're magical space wizards.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's nice getting it from the point of view of a nun.
It's true. And I mean, and Ezra is that. But in a lot of ways, like, Ezra is, he is a rebel first and a Jedi second.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool to see, you know, the character of Jin, who does, like, know her family and know where she came from. And, like, yes, they were taken away from her at a very, very young age. But it was interesting to see, like, Star Wars from a different perspective. And again, as you say, Katie, it was more of a war film. For me, I'm so invested, and I think this is part of the reason why I love Rebels so much, and aspects of Clone Wars as well, is that there is this focus on the sort of non-Jedi characters in a way that you just don't get them in the main Star Wars films.
Yes.
Because that struggle between, you know, the light and the dark and the force is, even though, yes, there's a big political side to Star Wars, there's a whole rebellion and anti-fascism and all of that is certainly present, there is this epic battle of good and evil at the center of it, and that
it's the Skywalker family saga.
Yeah.
And it just is.
And that just wasn't nearly as present in this film. We got a focus on all of those secondary characters, those people who are making the rebellion possible.
And it was joyous. And
it was
thrilling.
Great. It was great.
And because they were so fragile human, like, you guys, we talked about it before, and we said that the only time Darth Vader has been scary is on this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not true anymore!
Not true anymore! No!
We had a comment in chat, where did it go? I think it was from the Xehanorto about, live action Vader pulled a Rebels Vader.
Holy moly!
I will also say that this is the first time that I have had an actual really good sense of scale for AT-ATs and was scared of them.
Yeah.
Because usually it's just like, hey, they're walkers.
It's
like, this is really cool.
Like,
and this time it's like,
oh. Look at those things people dress up their greyhounds for Halloween.
It's like, oh, that's really cute. And then you actually see them and you see the scale and you see trying to take one down. And it just kind of turns its head a little and goes back on course. It's like, Oh God!
After
oh, that's terrifying.
To the face.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
that's like fighting Godzilla.
One of the speaking of which, one of the things that and we talked about pacing and how it can be both a good thing and a bad thing depending on you know, your mileage may vary for this film. But it's director Gareth Edwards, and I was one. I feel like I was one of the few people that loved the 2014 Godzilla movie that we got. And you can
who doesn't like the Godzilla?
A lot of people.
A lot of people.
Anyone really at this table? I feel like personally fighting. I really. Like this movie.
I feel neutral about it. I don't feel strongly about it one way or another.
But see, I didn't bother.
It's the best monster period.
High five.
It's the best version of Godzilla. So good.
But
I like Pacific Rim.
I concur with your assessment, Jolie, for sure. But anyway, that's not the point. Is he's a very polarizing director. But like, it's also very much within his style to take his time and then just shower you with awesomeness.
Yeah.
And that's what the entire last act of Rogue One was. It was, let's take our time, and then we're just going to shower you with geeky, awesome, wonderful stuff, and then we're going to kill everybody.
Well, and we also saw, so I can't remember who pointed this out, that we saw Red 5 go down, and that was what Luke stepped into. So, like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I'm sorry he went. That was very sad.
I know.
But
that
makes sense.
That, I think, for me, was the most... I mean, and let me be very clear. I cried for all but maybe 2 minutes of the film. I just literally was crying through the entire thing. Because I have, like, such a great relationship with my dad, so, like, the whole thing with Galen and Jim was so annoying.
There's so much I want to tell you. Oh, God, don't do this to my heart.
Like, this is going to end super well.
So basically, as I say, for me, it was that, and the fact that it just felt so Star Wars to me, and then the fact that it just went literally right up to seconds before A New Hope begins, it was such an emotional journey for me. But the thing that, like, really stood out to me was the fact that I felt the deaths of all of the unnamed rebels.
Yes, like when a nameless character gets shot and killed, and you see his friend go, no! Like you feel it. You're like, and you're saying, oh no! Guy whose name I didn't know.
Because we saw all these rebels get on the ship and know exactly what they were getting into and be like, I don't care if our leaders say we don't need to do it. We need to do this. This has to be a thing.
Watching an actual Suicide Squad, like, happen, like, a bunch of people being like, we're going to die,
like,
for this mission.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, like, the for the best. Like, we have to do this or it's over for all of us. And to see that spirit carry on after everyone dies into the ship, past Vader, like, to slip through the door,
like just take it.
It went from help us to take it, run.
Don't let this man out. Like, oh my gosh. Oh, someone pointed out to me, like, this is the first time those guys have seen a lightsaber, and it didn't click for me in the theater, but the second time I watched it, I was like,
that must have been so terrifying.
Oh, no.
They've, like, never seen a saber before.
I didn't even think about that.
Ghost man with, like, giant red sword. Oh my God.
Death itself has come for you.
Like, literally the evil space wizard that you heard the scary stories about is at the end of this hallway, and he is coming for you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And the other thing, kind of tying it back into Rebels a little bit, is something we've been playing, an idea we've been playing with in Rebels for a little while now, is the moral ambiguity of where a lot of our characters are at right now. And, my goodness, is there not a lot of gray area decision-making going on
Cassian.
In the midst of this war?
Yes.
Yeah. Batman.
Yeah. It's so nice to see something outside of that very black and white definition of good and evil.
Blue lightsaber good, red lightsaber bad.
Exactly.
Because we have this space future framework, and we've been getting epic fantasy movies in it. And this is the first time we've had a straight up honest to God war movie.
Yes.
It plays like a war movie. It feels like a war movie. It's incredible.
To the point where there's
and
even
I
a battle on a
watch,
beach.
And I could stand to watch another couple of these.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Like, sign me up. Yeah. I need it in my life. I'm going to go cry.
Oh, my God.
Walk into the theater with a whole box of tissues.
I lost my damn mind when they were at the Rebel base, and they were like, General Syndulla,
please
report to the
Evidently, Chopper was physically there in one of the scenes, and I just missed
him. Yeah, it's an earlier scene. I think that Mon Mothma is talking to maybe...
Might have been Bale.
Yeah,
not
it
sure.
might have been Bale or Rana. I don't know. But yeah, there is a scene where Chopper rolls by. Like, so there, if you're listening, this is going to make no sense. But basically, like, if you're looking at the screen, they're kind of here. And then Chopper just, like, rolls by.
If you split your screen
right
into thirds, they are in the third quadrant of the screen. And then the lower rolls third. Behind them. And it's beautiful. And it... Oh, man. So a friend of mine saw it at midnight, and he said that the energy... This is the first time I haven't seen a Star Wars movie at midnight, and I sold my tickets, and I feel terrible about it now. He was like, people literally were standing up in the third act. He's like, people just stopped caring about decency, and they were just, like, applauding all through the third act. And I'm like, this film brings people together.
Yeah.
It's my second favorite Star Wars movie of all time now.
What's your first?
Return of the Jedi.
Oh. And, you know, I'm not surprised.
That one's my favorite, too. That's the first one I ever saw.
It's so good.
I like. I mean, I love Return of the Jedi. I really do. But I, like I love all better. The original trilogy. I really just.
A New Hope is so slow.
I think of the thing is for me is I think of Empire and Jedi as one movie because story wise they kind of tell one story. But anyway, so you know we talked a lot about the fact that there probably weren't. I mean, basically, Rogue One delivered exactly what we predicted in terms of its connections to Rebels, which was Easter eggs. You know, people who have not seen Rebels are not alienated by the announcement about General Syndulla. They're not alienated by hearing Vanessa Marshall's voice in some of the fight scenes. And they are not alienated by not knowing who that random astromech droid that rolls by in the background
if they noticed him at all.
Now,
people like us are trying really hard not to scream out loud in the theater.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that I did think might happen is we would see characters from Rogue One in Star Wars Rebels, which is absolutely true. However, Saw Gerrera is not original to Rogue One.
No, he is a Clone Wars
He sure
character.
Is.
There is a theory going around that we might see Cassian at some point.
I would die. Lose everything.
And if Diego Luna does his voice, I mean, he has to.
I think you'd tune into that after show and we'd all just be here like, ugh. Collapsed onto the table, dying.
Heavens
to Betsy. The rapist!
Yeah, one of my friends, when she saw Rogue One at ArcLight, he was there and did like the intro, and she was like, "He is very attractive in person." I was like, "He's very attractive." Period. Yep.
In person, on the screen, 30 miles away.
Like, wouldn't it be funny if like those very brief scenes of Jyn and Cassian like kind of flirting, but not really because there's not a focus there? Wouldn't it be funny if like that wasn't in the script at all? That's just Felicity Jones going, "Ho, hello."
I mean,
hi.
Who could blame her?
No.
And I have to pretend to be mad at you. Okay.
Yeah. But let's talk about good old Saw
Gerrera. The actual episode. Yes. Was anyone else surprised at his condition, the condition we start off in? I thought he would be much worse for wear all.
I agree.
We were expecting to see him lose the leg in this episode.
I have a quick question now. Because, again, because of the condition that we see, and yeah, there was a huge tease when the bomb was right in front of him, BTW. I was like, that's not a cool show.
Yeah.
But because he's in pretty good shape, I mean, you could definitely see, like, elements of where he's going to go eventually.
Oh, yeah. Crazy coming
in. How many years exactly are, like, and here's, I want to set timeline now because I need to know how many years in between where we are in Rebels right now and Rogue One takes place.
My understanding is that where Rebels began was supposed to be 5 years. So I'm guessing we're more in the range of about 3 years now.
It's just so
which
weird
means
because
that
he
makes zero sense to
it
me.
It means
that
he's
is a
going
very
to
quick
age
downhill turn.
A lot.
He's going to decline very quickly.
Princess Leia, because we saw her, you know, not that long ago, she's going to age like
backwards.
Zero. backwards.
Yeah, she's actually Merlin.
she looked like she was in her 20s.
She did, and she's only supposed to be like 20 at the beginning of A New Hope. So
I feel like she looked and felt younger when we saw her. So
I picked her like
down.
14 when I saw this show. But I did feel like there was maybe 15 years between this, like just going off gut and what we're seeing visually from Rebels to Rogue One.
So that means that Saw takes a really hard left turn.
I mean, guys, look at Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, what happened? You look at Bail Organa, and he
he looks like basically exactly the same as he did at the end of
Baylor
Gone
has been in the Senate drinking kale smoothies. Obi-Wan's in the desert with sand. It's coarse and irritating and it gets everywhere. I'm so glad they quoted this in this episode. I cried.
I did like that that Sabine had a reference to how much she dislikes sand. Yeah, that was great.
No, so basically at the point that we're seeing Saw Gerrera now, so obviously like back in the Clone Wars, he was one of the people who was kind of defending his home planet of Onderon against the Separatists. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of that, basically, like, he and this other guy were like, hey, Jedi. And the thing that's kind of cool about that is that sort of first sort of uprising is kind of like sort of the seeds of what eventually becomes the rebellion. And so he and his sister were basically like part of this sort of rebel, you know, small-scale rebel alliance, just specifically defending their own planet. And they kind of called on the help of the Jedi, basically being like, we're getting attacked by, like, clone armies and stuff, and we want to keep our planet independent. Like, come help us, please. And they're like, all right. So, yeah, so Captain Rex is actually somebody who had previous interaction with Saw Gerrera, because he and Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka all went to Onderon and, like, trained these people to fight. Now, his sister was, like, she was, like, the star player there.
Like, she was, like, team captain for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She kicked so much butt.
Yeah, and she was a really good sniper.
Yeah, yes! Mm. I forgot she was a sniper. Yeah. This character gave me all the feels. I was like, love? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So his sister, basically, they're like, this girl is the ish. She's gonna be the leader. He gets real mad about that. And then he recklessly, like, goes on his own to try to, like, rescue planet's king.
I don't like where this is going. Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, in the ensuing skirmish after he manages to also get captured, his sister gets killed.
It's very dramatic.
So I've seen a lot of people in chat saying that he shot the rocket that brought down the ship his sister was on.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. So, like,
he's probably a little wrecked.
Yeah, so basically, like, he feels very responsible for his sister's death. Rightfully so. It's not necessarily 100% his fault. And again, there is that idea that we see explored very strongly in this episode, much in the way that it kind of is in Rogue One as well, of, like, how war is, you know, it's ugly.
Yeah.
And there will be casualties. So anyway, so at the point that we're seeing him now, all of that is way in the past. He started this, like, little rebel, like, cell called the Partisans. And he, at this point, has already, like, smuggled the Erso family to that remote planet that they're living on at the beginning of Rogue One. Mm-hmm. And not only that, he has rescued little Jin from the planet, and he's abandoned her in a bunker at this point.
Yeah, this is post her turning 16 and him being like, here's a knife, here's a blaster, bye!
That makes this doubly confusing, because what was making that loud clunking noise as he was coming up to get Jin? Like,
yeah.
The timeline does not make sense anymore. I feel like it's broken, and I need someone to repair
well,
it.
Well, that might be in part due to some reshoots that that Rogue One had. Like, if you see the first trailer for Rogue One, Saw doesn't have the crazy gray hair that he has in the final cut of the film.
Yeah.
So I think, and of course, animation takes so long.
Oh, this would have been animated ages ago. Yeah.
So, and then last minute filmmaking decisions, it's too late to change the animation. So they're just like, well, okay, thanks for giving us a heads up on those last minute changes, guys.
You just kind of hand wave a little bit and then saunter off. Yeah. Maybe he was wearing real heavy boots that day.
Yeah, or maybe his hair grows, like, a lot, and so he has to constantly shave it because he's embarrassed of his gray hair.
I mean, he did definitely have on some heavy armor, not the armor that's basically keeping him alive as we see in Rogue One, but
yeah.
He certainly didn't have cybernetic legs yet.
Well, these next couple of years, he gets absolutely wrecked by something. Mm-hmm. And it might be that he hasn't aged all that much in those 3 years. It might just be the trauma of attempting to overcome it and the health problems of whatever took his leg also screwing up his insides. Like, we don't know what happened to him. But I'm willing to kind of timey-wimey it because taking heavy damage can really age a person.
And yeah, to be fair, you don't see him walking up to the chef. So you can make the argument it's just equipment.
Real heavy boots.
Yeah.
Dramatic effect.
I'm satisfied, I understand. But yeah, in order to make it work, you have to do a little bit of backbending because I guess the films are just going to do what the films are going
to
do.
I'm a red versus blue fan. You have to hand wave everything to get anything to make sense. Yeah. So I'm just like, whatever, liberal amounts of hand-wavium, let's go.
Yeah. So basically, at the beginning of the episode, Bail Organa and Jun Sato show up on, you know, the blue hologrammy intercom system. And they are like, okay, guys, you got to go to Geonosis because there was, you know, obviously we know there's all kinds of shady activity that's been happening there. The last time they went to Geonosis, Zeb and Agent Callis ended up like going in an escape pod and on that frozen planet, and it was one of my favorite episodes of Rebels ever.
And it was really, really good.
I was trying to remember. I was like, when were they on Geonosis? Yeah. I can't remember. And it was because the episode took place on a different planet.
Yeah, they were there very briefly, and then they're like, just kidding, we're going to go to this other planet.
But I mean, I looked up the history of Geonosis in the series to be like, why do I know this name?
Yeah.
Oh, this is where they built the Death Star, and then they killed everyone on the planet to cover up the fact that they built the Death Star.
And it's also where the clone factory was during the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. Or the droid factory was, rather. Yeah. Clones are people.
Yeah, and clones were made on a different planet.
They were kind of made in a factory.
They were very much made in a factory.
They were absolutely factory. Test tube babies.
Built on a very... It was a very... I don't know if it's just constantly raining on that planet or if it was just constantly raining that day.
Monsoon planet.
So Geonosis is, it's like not far from Tatooine. It's terrible, terrible desert planet. It's like a worse desert planet than Tatooine, actually, because you literally cannot live there. And as you say, Katie, that was the site that they chose to build the Death Star. And then once they were like, okay, it's done enough, we're going to move it somewhere else to finish construction on it, they basically were like, let's murder the entire population just for safekeeping.
Because they've been, like, watching this moon-shaped thing, moon-sized thing, being built, and we can't let work
get out.
It was
the most frustrating thing to watch them drawing the Death Star in the sand, and I'm like, it's right there! Look at it!
And they kept going, circle within a circle. What could that possibly be?
Oh, it must be the egg. It must be the poison canisters, and it's just like, this is the worst game of Pictionary ever of all time.
But you have to think of it this way, and this is one of those things that, again, it's like, it's so satisfying as a Star Wars fan to see things like, oh my god, it's the Death Star.
But it's dramatic irony. The audience knows, the characters don't.
Yeah. Exactly.
Although, could you, because the Death Star is such an iconic part of Star Wars that, could you imagine what it, like, because I knew about the Death Star before I ever watched those movies, that sort of thing. But could you imagine being someone in this world who's unaware of the existence of a Death Star?
I was thinking about that when Click Clack, as we're calling him, the Geonosian, was drawing the Death Star in the sand. I was like, they have no concept of what the Death Star is.
Of a planet killer. Of something that can destroy a planet with a single blast.
Like, that's not things of this scale. He should have been like, we are here. This is the Death Star. Like, I don't know.
And they'd be like, that bug is talking nonsense.
Well, I mean, they have a concept of genocide because the Jedi were wiped out. Yeah. Poison was used to wipe out the Geonosians. Like, they understand killing everything on a planet.
Right.
Killing the planet itself is just so far beyond the pale.
Yes, sir. I will say, this is just to circle back to Rogue One for a hot second, holy moly, I loved seeing how the Death Star literally destroyed planets from the surface.
Yeah, and its perspective! It's finally scary. Like, a rock exploding is just a rock. But a giant beam coming to destroy. And what's cool is now that we know the precision of the Death Star. Like, it could take out just a city.
It's like,
but
we only want
like, screw that. Just blow the whole planet up.
We want you to explode this tiny little city. And it's like, okay. And you're like, okay, they're going to take out a city. And then you're watching it and going, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You're
miles and miles away from the initial blast, and you just see it like a wave coming at you.
So if you've never watched Rebels, Rogue One has officially made Vader AT-ATs and the Death Star scary to a generation that has grown up with them and has become desensitized to them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, I was...
Now they're terrifying
profoundly
again.
Profoundly affected by the Death Star. Yep. But yeah, again, like they're...
Well done!
But that's the thing, is like the characters in Rebels have no concept of what this is, because in Rogue One they illustrate very well that people just can't even begin to imagine the destructive capabilities of this weapon. And again, it's like a circle in a circle. What does that mean? Nothing.
No, if I was playing Pictionary with this guy, I wouldn't know what he was saying. No.
Is that a fried egg? Yeah. Are you hungry?
Yeah, exactly. So basically they're going to basically go down to the surface of Geonosis, and they have to find Saw Gerrera and rescue him. And there's also, like, a power source that they're sensing on the planet. Mm-hmm. So they kind of, like, split up into two units where, like, Hera stays with the ship. Most of the boys go to find Saw Gerrera, and then Sabine and Zeb stay behind to go check out the power source, which turns out to be a shield reactor.
Yeah.
Shield generator.
I love Kanan continually getting outvoted.
Yes.
And he was making all of the same decisions, and everyone else was like, no, we're going to continue. And we wouldn't have had an episode if we'd stuck with the same decisions,
no.
But still,
no.
I feel for him.
And I think this was a very good use of Captain Rex.
Yeah.
Because the thing is I love Captain Rex as a character, and, you know, we saw sort of one of his biggest flaws as a character earlier this season when he did, you know, battle with the battle droids. And it was like, the final days of the Republic.
The Clone War's not over yet.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Exactly.
It's something he can't leave behind him.
Right. And so then to see him come back in contact with somebody who, you know, he fought alongside during the Clone Wars.
And mentored.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was one of the people that, you know, taught... No, the people on Onderon had a fight.
When Saw, like, threw him over his shoulders, onto the ground, I was like, oh, that's a hurtful thing to do to, like, an old friend. Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's not good. Please don't do that. Yeah. Why? Why? Yeah.
But I think you needed, like, this was an instance of, like, Captain Rex, like, hanging on, like, having that sort of, like, soldier's loyalty that he has.
Yeah.
Ending up being a really good thing, because, as you say, Katie, like, he was the one who outvoted Kanan. If it had been just Kanan and Ezra, they would have left.
Yeah.
You know?
Chopper still wouldn't have gotten a vote.
That was so good.
Droids aren't people. And the more I watch this series, the more I'm like, oh my god, they're all droid racists. Seriously, droids aren't people in this canon, and it's horrifying.
I feel like in this case, they were like, no, we know Chopper's going to vote the murder round, so
don't get a scene.
He's just going to veto whatever.
Yeah, it's like, if it was like
C-3PO, killing everything wasn't an option.
If it's C-3PO, they might care. Somebody has, like, some intelligent thought.
What's his name?
Like, okay,
AP5.
AP5.
Yeah. Like, oh, what are your thoughts on this? Like, what are the
he's the strategy droid. Yeah. Chopper's just cray.
Yeah. He is.
He's totally cray, but I love him.
I'm still mad that he didn't get a vote.
So that does ultimately, you know, lead them to Saw Gerrera. And as we discussed, it's like, we see him in this state that is, like, vastly, at least physically healthier than we see him in Rogue One. But we do see sort of the beginnings of, like...
him going off the deep end a little
and
bit.
Like, why he totally separated from the Rebellion, or, like, why the Rebel leaders chose to totally cut ties with him. Because at this point, they haven't.
No, not
it's,
yet.
It's, you know, Bail Organa, who's like, I don't talk to that dude in Rogue One.
And his actions are completely understandable, even when they discover, oh, it's just a guy, he's just trying to protect the egg and, you know, keep it, you know, preserve his species. Because, go ahead. But, like, you can understand, because literally everybody he came here with is dead.
Yeah.
So, like, you can understand that doesn't justify it, but you can understand, like, why he's starting to become a little
less
kilter.
Here's why this upsets me.
Go ahead.
The same thing we see with Ezra, where it's like, you keep rushing headlong into situations trying to be the hero, and you make it worse. This
so
already killed your sister. Like, the same, like, bullheadedness. Like, I just, it,
the
it
same
did.
Bravado,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're just charging headlong into situations because you think that that's the best. And then your whole crew died, and now another crew comes and is like, we're gonna help you, and you're still just without thought charging like straight into situations that are dangerous and get others around you hurt. That kind of character is really frustrating and difficult to watch. Like, it's real. It's authentic. And I don't know who the voice actor was, but the performance was stunning.
It was
for Forrest.
It was
for
Forrest.
Okay, then great. You did it, Forrest.
Trained actors. Yes. You're also, you're watching this going like, wow, they do a really good Forrest Whitaker.
I did. I was like, that's amazing.
No, that was Forrest Whitaker.
Okay, good. Well, good job.
What I loved watching was the change in Ezra's demeanor. Like, for most of this, he was doing the same thing that Rex was. All right, let's be gung-ho, let's move forward, let's do this, it's gonna be great. And Kanan's doing the Jedi thing for the most part, sensing something, saying, let's think about this. And it's when the soldier thing stops working for Ezra, and he goes, okay, we lost him, now what the... Oh, right! I'm a Jedi.
Yeah.
Force jump. Oh, my gosh.
It's the force jump, and then it's also the empathy and the talking to him. It's like a complete shift based on which dad he wants to be like today.
Yeah, this is true.
And I will say, I did like, again, because that is one of the things that is sort of one of Ezra's strong characteristics, is that he does have an incredible amount of empathy for people, and sometimes that bites him in the butt, but like... In this case, you know, his empathy really kind of shone through. And the fact that Kanan recognizes that in him, because, you know, as Saw Gerrera is trying to, like, basically interrogate this Geonosian, he's like, no, let Ezra talk to him. And I did have a moment where he started talking at him, and I was like, oh, good, Ezra's going to understand him. Nope, didn't understand a word. It's cool, though.
I just love the, Ezra, he understands you. You don't have to speak to him like he's dead. Oh, God.
We are from the rebellion.
Because if you speak slowly and at a higher volume, they will comprehend you. He already knew what you guys were all saying.
It's funny because, like, I think we all do that, like, unintentionally do that when you are talking to somebody in a language you don't understand.
Yeah.
And then you think about it later and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm that idiot.
Yeah. But
it was funny, though, because the thing is, like, and that to me was just such a real human moment.
Yes.
Because that is our inclination when we're trying to communicate with somebody that we don't know. And I appreciated the extra use of, like, sign language that means nothing.
Rebellion!
Yes, this could mean anything.
Yeah. It's a circle with a circle in it.
Yeah.
But we basically do come to find out that Click-Clack, as Ezra named him, because that was sort of the first string of Geonosian that he, like, mumbled, is protecting a queen egg. So basically the Geonosians are these, like, insect dudes who have adapted, and dudettes as well.
They're kind of a hive mind, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And they've adapted perfectly to live on this completely uninhabitable planet.
Oh, shoot. If they're a hive mind... That must be maddening for this poor guy because it's nothing but silence. Mm-hmm.
Well, they talk about how there might be more of them below the surface and that this was the only one we've seen. Yeah. So it's entirely possible that there's more of them down there. And it's like, no, you're doing fine up there. And he's just kind of...
But basically sort of the justification... I mean, in addition to the fact that as far as we know, all of his people have been killed off, the reason that there are all these, you know, battle droids running around, he's basically activated them to try to protect this queen egg so that, like, the species can continue.
Yeah.
Which is just devastating. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's like... And that becomes sort of one of the big moral dilemmas of the episode of, okay, like, I understand, Saw Gerrera, that... the Geonosians were responsible for creating the technology that ultimately, you know, murdered your sister. But, like, it's not like they decided to do it, and they don't, and even if they were awful, they've now been, like, diminished to such a pathetic state.
They're not even really a people anymore. They're like a person and a hope of an egg.
Yeah, they were victims of a genocide, and he's sitting there ready to finish the job. Like,
no, when that egg got dropped and it's in that particular point in the frame, I was fully expecting his foot to come down and crush it.
And we were both expecting that. Like, no.
So happy when it didn't.
The show rarely goes that dark. And I didn't really expect for that to happen, but I was kind of I don't want to say shocked, but okay. How long do you follow a crazy man? Yeah. Like, how long are you like, this is not a stable situation for us, and we should just leave.
I mean, but if you believe what he believes, chaotic good is still good. And at this point, he is still vaguely chaotic good. By the time we hit Rogue One, he's chaotic neutral. And he's just...
And again, for context, everybody here, you know, Rex's context is an old friend. Mm-hmm. And, you know... And Kanan and Ezra don't really know this guy, but he's clearly been through a traumatic ordeal. You give him some leeway. Hera's the only one that really knows he's extreme, and we all know how extreme he ends up getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one knows he's going to become a crazy cave hermit guy.
Right. I mean, at this point, it's like he just has some, like, kind of giggle
cave hermit mob boss.
Yeah. Anytime he, like, had that little giggle, I was like, ugh.
But
like,
yeah, this is going to end so poorly.
Kanan gave it, and maybe it's because Rex was there and he respects Rex, as you should. But it just felt like they gave them a lot more leeway than they've given pretty much anyone else on the show in these situations. Like, Kanan's usually like, this is dangerous and we're stopping. Mm-hmm. Like, turn back around, or is making up another plan. And so, I don't know. It was
they were also charged to go and get him. But I know.
And Ezra's kind of coming in to his own as an adult. He's still a teenager, but... He's no longer the tiny child that they adopted.
That's
so season one, it was like, nope, I have the say. And now it's like, this is my teenager who only still kind of
listens
to me.
And I kind of liked that, too. I liked that when they were like, you're outvoted, you know, like, you're the deciding vote. I liked that was a discussion and not an argument.
Yeah. And I liked that Kanan conceded, basically being like, you know what, guys, I really hate to be wrong, and I really hope this isn't one of those times. And he just went with it. I will say that I think that seeing... Saw Gerrera in this state that we see him in this episode, and then thinking back on Forrest Whitaker's performance in Rogue One, you do feel like, even when he is, like, totally crazy on Jedha, that there is sort of, like, this sadness and humanity, like, somewhere deep in him. And I really think that this was such a good predecessor to that, and, like, supported that like really nuanced I mean, this is what you get when you have Oscar winning performers in Star Wars films.
But this is kind of what Star Wars, like, outside franchises are for. Like, I'm continually surprised at how, when I read, like, a novel or a comic book, or I watch the show, how much I'm like, this makes the movie like 20 times better. It's so profound and amazing, and this does make it makes you feel so much more connected to soccer and films. When I watched Rogue One, I didn't really care for the character at all. It didn't really hit me emotionally, and I was kind of bummed
about it. Because you don't know what he's been through.
You just kind of look at him and go, you just tortured a man with a telepathic squid that had no reason to be in the movie? This is why people worry about that first third of Rogue One. There was a telepathic squid that came out of nowhere and receded back into nowhere.
It didn't have a lot of effect on the pilot. Like, there's just a lot that needed to happen with that.
For a minute, but then he's like,
even
no,
he's
I'm
like,
back.
I'm fine.
We good.
Stop having tentacle monsters in your movies.
Or use them. I don't know. This painted a full picture, and I was glad we got this moment. And also, I feel like it's great fan service.
Yeah.
Like, it was a wonderful gift if you did watch Rogue One over the holiday, season, to come back and be like, and here's some additional story for you. Just, it was like a lovely, like, last holiday present.
Yeah, no, it was super fun.
Real quick question. Mm-hmm. How many characters have started off, canonically speaking, in, like, Clone Wars, and then actually made the transition to either the prequel films or Rogue One? I feel
one. Saw Gerrera.
Saw Gerrera. Maybe General Grievous? Because I feel like he started out
He was in the animated Clone Wars, I think. Yeah. It's been a
technically,
long time since I watched that.
Hera. And Chopper.
Technically.
But they don't have... Yeah.
Certainly not to the extent that we saw Saw Gerrera.
Saw Gerrera, that's unprecedented.
Absolutely. And I think Saw Gerrera was a great choice. Mm. From the point of view that... It's the same way that characters like... I think like Hondo Ohnaka could turn up in the films. Because ultimately...
If he lives that long.
Because ultimately, he's a fun character. We love the episodes with him. He's this great, morally gray pirate character. In the big picture, he doesn't necessarily have that much of an impact on the story. Certainly not in the way that any of the main characters in Rebels do, or like Ahsoka does. Like, we just don't have the same emotional attachment to him. He could be, it was why he was so easy to take out of Clone Wars and drop into Rebels.
I really hope he does make it into a movie, because you don't you don't have to use a lot of him to make that impact.
You just need him in a market or something.
To like one liner and then boom, he's gone.
Or space, like, it would have been really great if the pirate Han got the monsters from him and Hondo.
Oh my god. Han would also be real old at that point.
Yes, which would have been even better.
If he lives that long.
Yeah. Oh, hey, man. Different alien species age at different rates.
The weak I live for.
No idea.
Anyway,
he will be wheeling and dealing until the day he dies.
But so I think Saw Gerrera was a good choice, because he was sort of established in Clone Wars as being that, like, extremist character, but it was just that one story arc, and then, you know, to put him in here and then also show sort of like how the rebellion is slowly coming to be, and he was, his like rebel cell was one of the rebel cells that was sort of the founding members of the rebellion, of the Rebel Alliance itself, but because he was so extreme, I mean, like, he was labeled a terrorist, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And they used terrorist methods in order to get their points across.
Exactly.
It's just like, please don't.
Yeah.
Stop that.
Can you not?
Yeah, so it was interesting. It was great to see him in this episode. I liked all the stuff with Zeb and Sabine, but it was definitely secondary to the stuff that was going on with Saw Gerrera.
I love their character interactions. Yes. The series, we were introduced to them, like, them being on, you know, their part of the mission together. So it's always nice to see them work off of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the fact that they got the, like, reflector cell out of the shield generator. And, you know, used it in their battle against the
droids. We had some of the best battle scenes in the Rebels so far.
Yeah.
The escape at the end where they just blast through the ship. I was like, what is even happening? Yeah. This is more aerial battles for Star Wars. Is all the time, everywhere.
And I just thought that, well, she's showing her inexperience. Let's blow it up.
Does anybody feel like that particular officer, for like, that she's going to be, that she's going to come back?
Oh, yeah. That felt like an introduction. Like,
and she was a person of color.
And she has purple eyes. It's like, if she was just some nameless nobody, they would have just, like, you know, done the hat thing with no eyes. Yeah. But
I did like, and even if she doesn't come back, I love that this random officer was a woman and a person of color.
Yeah. Because we don't see that a ton in terms of Empire people. Mm-hmm.
I love that she whacked her underling like you whack a naughty dog with a newspaper. Yeah,
totally. Totally.
And I get some results.
And I liked that, you know, at the end of the episode, you know, they lost all of the poison cells, and basically, you know, Jun Sato and Bail Organa are like, you know, we know you got pictures of them. It's not going to convince everybody, but here are all the things you did do well. So, like, your successes, like, totally outweigh that one little failure. Awesome job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to
you didn't,
like,
get all of the extra credit, but you still passed the assignment.
And I hate to say it, but our crew can never be too successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, again, A New Hope needs to happen in the way that it does.
Yeah.
And if, like, they prove to everybody, look, this is proof that the Empire is committing atrocities, then events of A New Hope can't play out the way they do.
Yeah. But that's what's great about this, is that even though we know, okay, they can only do so much, they can't go past this boundary, we know we're not going to get this particular ending, we're still sitting here going, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it?
Yeah.
We're on the edges of our seats just going, oh my God. And that is really, really good story execution.
It is. It's really, really good storytelling. We have a couple of new iTunes reviews.
Oh, yay!
Yes! One is from December 17th, which would have been after the last episode that we did.
Before the break?
Before the break, yes. Yeah, because December 17th was when Rogue One came out. Or it was December 16th. So it's, the name of the review is Moom Malu from The J Beal. Awesome podcast with great insight and theories. I know you don't think the Star Wars movies will use any of the ghost crew, but what if they use secondary characters? Who would you most like to see show up in the movies? This person literally mentions exactly what we just talked about, Hondo Ohnaka. Quote unquote, oh, the stories I could tell you, so many of them true. And then the other one is called Love These Ladies Rebels by Wolf Earth Ninja. I always like listening to AfterBuzz, but I love the Rebels. I always like listening to AfterBuzz, but I love the Rebels podcast. Aww. I don't get to see that many women that know lore of Star Wars, and it's great to hear hashtag Team Rebel after every episode. I can't wait to listen to them when Rebels comes back from the break and meet a certain someone from Rogue One in Rebels. Side note, I was listening to The Man Inside, and they mentioned listening to the podcast while doing art homework, and I was literally doing that while I was listening.
That's amazing.
Wow. We're having podcastception.
I know. Yes. I know. It's great. It's great. Let's hit some really quick predictions, and then we need to wrap things up. But
maybe.
All right, let's just do it.
Yeah, let's go.
So we've seen the...
That trailer, though. I know. You're still giving us the light show.
We
I love
like it.
You.
We like it.
That trailer, though.
I know.
That trailer, though. Yep. We are getting a showdown.
I know.
Down on Tatooine. And let's be real, one of them lives through A New Hope.
Yeah. I feel at like least this, one. This season might finally see the actual demise of Darth Maul. I don't want to, like, make any God, guys. Really crazy
predictions. The end of his story. Wow. Yes.
I mean, like, I wouldn't be sad because it's like, dude... Dude, you're I'd having some trouble here.
Mm-hmm. I just need it to end in the most epic of ways. Like, yeah. To end it, like, Maul's life, like, the saga of Maul is so near and
it's
dear to
such
my
a
heart.
Tragedy.
It's like,
so
end it with a bam.
You know it's going to be wild.
Yeah. Like, end it in a way that, like, people will sing songs about the life of Darth Maul.
And I would be absolutely okay if that episode was just that fight.
Yeah,
I'd be okay with, you know, a very special episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it's just Maul showing up on the planet and 22 minutes of fight.
And then
I'm down.
Luke Skywalker, little Luke Skywalker crosses the street just after it happens. Oh, hey, old Ben. Hi, Luke. Yeah. What a crazy old guy.
I'm going to pick up some power converters.
I actually wouldn't mind, like, seeing Luke in that capacity in just, like, the deep background crossing the street on Tatooine.
Or even just watching the fight, like, whoa.
No.
He can't know about old Ben.
We
ruined everything with Saw Gerrera.
Sabine training with the Darksaber.
Yes.
It's going to be great, but we're getting played off. So, Katie, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on most of the social medias at Kiaxe. That is KIAXET. That's also the YouTube. The Snapchat is Kia Prime. I don't think any of my shows are coming back for a chunk of time, except for Ruby. That's on Thursday.
Megan!
I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with two Ks. Be sure to check those out.
Joelle!
Hey, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com. Come back Tuesday for Incorporated. Wednesday for Incorporated. That's what it is.
And I'm Emma Fife. I can be found all over the internet wherever Emma Fife's are sold at my name, Emma Fife. Really cool, guys. I am now doing a show over on Hyper RPG. It is a Star Wars RPG. It is being game mastered by the wonderful Burt Jennings, and it is starring myself, Hector Navarro, Darren DePaul, who was a panelist with us LA Comic Con, if any of you guys saw that, as well as Kim Cannon, who was the very first Jedi Master in the Star Wars Jedi show at Disneyland. So be sure to check that out. We stream live on Hyper RPG's Twitch channel at 9:00 p.m. on Friday nights. It's awesome. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week talking more Star Wars Rebels. It's going to be great. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
I am one with the Force, and the Force is with me.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.